It is the Pens Universe podcast. I guess you could call it the postseason podcast. The unfortunate postseason that is. Now, I guess everyone get their golf clubs, I suppose.
Four.
Joined by Corey and Damien, the usual suspects. I'm Doug, and we'll be wrapping up, looking forward, you know, remembering the good times. Not so much the old bad times, but we'll talk about that, sure, I'm sure. So, it's been a while since we did a podcast, and, you know, the heat of the battle here, as the playoffs came up, we just kind of wanted to watch, sit back and watch, and now it's time to, unfortunately, sit back and watch other teams. But, Corey, Damien, how you guys doing? Have you recovered from the loss yet?
I had one of my neighbors across the street, Philadelphia Flyer fans. Mm-hmm. I had a Stanley Cup banner from 91, 92, 09 hanging in the window facing their house. And just before I sat down here at the computer, I took the banner down from the window. And I'm doing all right, you know. I'm hanging in there.
Damien, you all right?
Yeah, I'm much better than I was, although still a little bit depressed about the whole thing. And it didn't help at all that I lost my deck hockey championship on the same evening. So that was a pretty depressing day this past Sunday altogether.
So you guys are, what, 4-for-5?
We're 3-for-4.
3-for-4. Ah, 3-for-4. 3-for-the-last-4. Pretty good record. Have to get
not
that.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. I mean, I've it's a good run. I guess I can't win every single time we play. So. Pretty close. That's you got to be happy with what you got.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So, Damien, we'll start with you. I guess if there was one thing you could point to that was the downfall, if it was a game, a player, structure, what was it that made the Penguins get out in the first round? What do you think, Damien?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we could go through pretty much the whole list, and you might hear the defense, you might hear Fleury, you might hear lack of production from, you know, the two-headed monster. I just think it was kind of the sense of urgency. I mean, after they went up 3-0 in the freaking game one.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, wow, here we go again. This is going to be, you know, just like it was in 2009. You know, just they start dominating, you know, have a few setbacks. The other team tries to climb their way back, and they just get nothing. And I remember it was the second goal of after they had gotten that second goal, Philly got that second goal, and I remember thinking to myself, I was texting my my buddy from New York, who's the other Pens fan that I know from New York, and I said to him, I said we're gonna lose this game. He said, I know. And as soon as, you know, they tied it up, I don't know, it was pretty close towards the end of the game. They went to overtime, and I was like, they just looked after that second goal. It just looked like they, you know, they tried to sit back, and I think that's. You know, I almost think that after they got their third goal, and then that save by Brizgalov on Letang, which would have made it 4-0, I think that was just kind of like that a huge turning point in the series right there, because the Penguins just, I think, sort of just sat back and thought, you know, we're favored to be the champs. We're obviously dominating the Flyers already, and now let's sit back. And I literally think they sat back for the next two games after that, after they lost that game. It just, they were like, you know, it's almost like you remember in Street Fighter when you would stun a guy? Or was it Street Fighter? No, Mortal Kombat. You would stun a guy and you'd sit there just kind of wobbling until you finished him or whatever.
Yep.
That's what I felt like the Penguins are doing. And sometimes you miss your opportunity in Mortal Kombat to kill the guy, and then he kind of comes back to life. And that's sort of what the Penguins did, is they came back to life for two games and they went right back in their hole and just, you know, got finished off. So I think the team is fine. I don't think that, you know, you can blame one particular guy. I mean, you know, we'd like to see better production than Crosby, and Malkin just got schooled pretty much. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. He just got, you know, handled by a 19-year-old, and I guess that's good for him. You know, not Malkin, of course, but for the kid to have his his time. But at the same time, I think it was just a matter of a desire thing. I think it was kind of getting caught up, and I think they were stymied. I don't think there was anything overly wrong. I obviously, the whole thing of, you know, eight goals back to back games, and then, you know, then they put up 10 goals. It's just, that's just awkward. That was just horrible goaltending all the way around, one way or the other. But if they won game one, got out of there, yeah, they would have lost probably. You know, who knows if they would have lost eight goals the next two games. But I just think it was one of those things that just got stunned at home, in overtime, and then they just didn't recover real fast.
Best use of Mortal Kombat analogy ever. But Corey, can you possibly top that? What is your explanation for why they were ousted in the first round?
Well, I guess to take the Street Fighter thing, I'd say the Flyers RIU-kened the Penguins for six games.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, Yoga Flame. I think we were all kind of in shock after, you blow a 3-goal lead game one, get blown out of your place game two, and all of a sudden you're down 3-0 in a series. I think it was either Sullivan or Dupuis, one of the reporters asked, I think it was after game five, is it that you guys were just kind of, bought into the hype and everybody thinking that you guys were in just a role in this series, and whoever the player was said, admitted that yeah, they kind of bit into all the hype and what everybody was predicting and kind of thought that this was just going to be a stepping stone, an easy hurdle onto a Stanley Cup final. And I think by the time they finally realized, oh shit, we got to play, they're down three games.
Yeah.
And, it's goaltending, it was defense, it was key players showing up, not at the right times. I don't know. I think, I think that everybody's going to do some soul searching, as weak as that sounds, but I think these guys need to kind of look at themselves in the mirror and figure out, what kind of hockey team they are. Just somebody that's gonna, think that, a series is gonna get, wrapped in a box and handed to them, and here you go, on to the next round. Or, they need to be a dominating team, like they were in 08 and 09 too. They really haven't, shown. They really haven't been that same team the past three playoff runs, and given they've had, they've run into a couple buzzsaws with Montreal and I think Tampa. I think the Tampa series, you can take a lot of similarities with that series to this Philadelphia one. I think a lot of people thought, Pittsburgh was gonna take it to them, and I think that they left a lot on the table that series, and obviously this is one that I think everybody feels like that we should have won going into it, but clearly Philadelphia was the team that showed up and, earned it. I mean, they absolutely earned it.
Yeah. I can't add too much to what you guys have said. I mean, I think it's hard to point the finger at any one person. I will say that I feel as though the coaching staff has trouble adapting to a playoff type scheme, and I do think there needed to be some changes that would have been made there, coaching staff wise. It would have been nice to see some 2-1, 3-1 games, after so many goals were being scored. I mean, I know a lot of people probably enjoyed it for all the goals, but for a lot of us, we probably were agonizing over how many were being scored, really. So I will add that in there. But, I know it's obviously a bitter taste, but, to try to put some kind of good light on it, was there one player that stood out for you over anybody else, or, was something unexpected on the good side throughout the series? Anyone in particular, Corey?
Sean Couturier. I think we keep calling him this 19-year-old kid, but I think after that series, you can't really use his age as a descriptor.
Yeah.
He turned a lot of heads, at least mine for sure, because he absolutely owned Malkin for for that series.
How about any Penguins that you were impressed with? Anybody at all?
Oh. You know, I was actually impressed. Stahl. I think Stahl really took it up a couple levels. You know, the hat trick game. And he seemed to be one of the more consistent players, a third line centerman. I mean, if you know, call him what he is, he's a third line centerman.
Yeah.
You know, he played like a first line centerman for, you know, pretty much the entire series. And I don't know, maybe trying to get more teams interested in him. I don't know. Maybe trying to keep Shiro from maybe weighing his options and free some cap space up. I don't know, but I'll take Stahl.
All right, we'll get into the moves a little bit later. But Damian, same question to you. Impressed by any Penguin or any other player in particular?
Well, I don't really want to talk about Flyers, but they were all really, really good, I'd say. I mean, I think their defense was incredible, and they just knew exactly what to do to shut down Malkin. And, you know, they really didn't give the Penguins a lot of time and space. And, you know, what would be probably considered one of the more dominant penalty kills teams in the past two seasons was humiliated.
Yeah.
From that power play. And I'd say their power play is another thing. So, although it pains me to say that, I just have to speak from a hockey standpoint as opposed to a team standpoint, because, you know, we just don't like the Flyers. But, you know, from a Penguin standpoint, besides Stahl, I think, you know, I'll definitely piggyback on what Corey said. You know, with Jordan, I mean, he just didn't seem to have any lapses in any of his shifts. He went out hard. You know, he got, you know, like I said, he got that hat trick game. He literally shot 50% in, you know, in the playoffs. He took 12 shots and got 6 goals. So
yeah.
he really did well. I think two other guys he had handed to from the Penguins is one, Tyler Kennedy, actually. I mean, he had 6 points, 3 goals, and 3 assists in 6 games, which is a little bizarre because, you know, he's certainly not a point-per-game guy, but, mm-hmm. yeah, he showed up. And he hit some pretty important goals. And the other guy I'll hand it to in the at least one game that he played, Game 5, was Eric Tangray. He played a pretty good couple of shifts out there. I was pretty impressed with how, you know, he went and grinded and felt like he had something to prove, especially playing in Philly in front of his hometown folks. So I think he did pretty well. I mean, considering, you know, his pretty much overall pretty much horrible season that he had, you know, the regular season with the Penguins, with the big club, he did a pretty decent job. So impressed with what he had to offer, and who knows where that's going to happen. And we'll get into the moves obviously as we continue.
Yeah, I, you know, it's hard to pick out a defenseman and say that they played well or impressed you. You know, I think by myself about to name one is basically saying that he played better than the worst of the others. But I feel like Matt Niskanen played with confidence. Even if he didn't play well, he played with confidence. And he showed some offensive ability, which I feel is almost as though he's not really allowed or given the chance to show what his offensive ability is, where he sits in the lineup. And, you know, he had a pretty good season overall. So, like I said, it's kind of the thought that he may have been the best of the worst, but you know, we'll go with that for now. It's hard to argue Jordan Stahl, obviously, and that is a transition. So let me throw this question out to you guys real quick. There's a radio station in Pittsburgh that had a poll talking about the big three centers, Stahl, Malkin, Crosby, and if you could only keep two of the three, who would you keep? Now the answers came back, actually, there was actually fair variation, which somewhat surprised me. Obviously, Crosby Malkin kind of led the way. But in second place was Crosby and Stahl. So let me pose that question to you guys. If you had to keep only two of the three, who would you keep? Damian, you first.
Well, I'm going to think long term here. And I think if I had a choice right now, not necessarily looking at the current contracts, but if I had a choice to who I would think would I'd rather have long term, I think I'd rather have Crosby and Staal. And I say that not because I don't want Geno, but I feel kind of like Geno is, while I think he loves Pittsburgh, and you know he obviously has a big following, and he's got a cup, he's got Conn Smythe, he's got two Art Rosses, got a 50 goal a year. All of his achievements have obviously been on this team. I think there's going to come a time when he's going to really want to sort of spread his wings and become the man, so to speak. I think that time's going to come. And I don't necessarily see that from Jordan Staal. I think to a degree I see that, but I think he would be really comfortable in a second. Pretty much anybody's going to be happy behind Sidney Crosby. I don't think there's anybody else in the league even that might be like, I'm probably better than Crosby as a center, so I should probably be number one. So I think it's almost like it goes without saying that Crosby's going to be your number one center just about any team that he plays on. So, and while he's obviously the face of the franchise and he's not going anywhere, I think that if I was to try to lock up two guys long term, 8-year contracts, 9-year contracts, I think I'd go with them. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't say that to say anything against Geno, but I think that there's going to come a time when Geno's going to want to be, lead a team of his own. I really feel like, and it's kind of like, it's the second coming of Mario and Jágr, but I really feel it's kind of like that situation. I don't think, he would get as frustrated as Jágr may have been. It's kind of eerie that you see, Crosby going down with the concussions and Geno having a lead, sort of the way Mario went down with his cancer, over his Hodgkin's disease, and then Jágr had to lead the way. It's almost like the second coming of the whole situation. If that same situation would present itself, you would want to do the same thing. So that's where I would see it. And then at the same time, that frees up an incredible amount of cap space because Crosby's not going to sign for anything more than $9 million just because of the cap and whatnot, because he can't. Maybe $10 million, I suppose, whatever the max goes up based on the new collective bargaining agreement and whatnot. But Staal might tap out at a $7 million guy, maybe. Although I tend to think that he might be, I see him more of an equivalent of like James Neal, and where Cheryl could probably lock him up for another $5 million and maybe $5 million a year. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Corey, what do you think?
Crosby and Malkin, no question. Would you rather have, if you're in the opposing locker room and you're looking down the depth chart, you see line, first line and second line. Which line puts the fear of God in you? You see Crosby and then you got to follow up Malkin, or Crosby and Jordan Staal? That's nothing against Jordan Staal, but that's what you're comparing here. No question. Staal has intangibles, obviously, with his penalty kill, and showing obviously his offensive talent. The 6 goals that he had here in this series, and we've seen ever since he's been a Penguin. To me, it seems like it's a no-brainer. I think with Staal, I think he understands that it's always going to be Crosby and Malkin. And while I think he's enjoyed the ride, I think he's ready to step out of that, the shadow of the two-headed monster, and kind of take charge of another team. And I don't blame him. Not to say that that's what's going to happen. I would love all three of them to, come back with the CBA and Shiro to sign, have all three of them locked up long term. I think that'd be great. But you gotta wonder really what's going around in Staal's head right now. You win a cup and then you don't even make the conference finals, let alone out of the first round, the following 3 years. Maybe he's looking to get out. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually in agreement with Damian on this one. I don't know if it's this, second coming or whatever, but I can see Malkin being one of those guys that wouldn't necessarily try to get himself out of the situation, but might want to be around more Russians or whatever it may be. I think it's scary to think about what could happen if there's more concussion issues with Sid, and then you don't have Malkin there. That is a little bit scary, but I almost feel like what Jordan Staal has shown us is that he's still growing, and that all those intangibles could count for a lot of things. But obviously, this discussion and any discussion on further moves is, very contingent on CBA discussions that are impending. So we're talking now as if everything's going to go smooth sailing, but we'll see how that goes. But I'll give each of you the floor here for a few minutes here just to discuss what you think might be some moves coming up this offseason by Ray Shero, maybe what you'd like to see, what you think you'll see, any moves that you hope you'll see, perhaps. But Corey, you can have the floor first, sir.
Well, I guess, let's name off the players that are either going to be restricted or unrestricted here at the end of the year. You got Sullivan, Tangrady, Asham, McIntyre, Richard Park, Niskanen, Strait, and Brent Johnson. Of those that I named, who I most likely see getting signed back on, I would say Matt Niskanen. Just because of his consistency on the blue line and just how inconsistent as a whole the Penguins defense has been to finish the season. I think that him sticking around, I think, will benefit the Penguins. I'd say the most likely to go, and to me it's a no-brainer, and I think a lot of people are, foreseeing this, but I think Brent Johnson's ship has sailed, and I think he'll be cut out and let go as a free agent. I think he try and work something with Sullivan. I liked him. He was, for someone who's injury prone, he kind of got off to a slow start, but I think he adds, I think he's one of those guys, an experienced guy that's gonna, some young guys will look to in a locker room. You don't really have a whole lot of age really on this team. I guess if you look at, like a Chris Kunitz, Richard Park, but not a whole lot of postseason experience there. But I'd say him and Orpik really are two of the, older guys there in the locker room that you would look to. But I think McIntyre's gone. I think Asham's gone. I don't know. I think you gotta, at this point, if Shiro still found something in Tangrady to, not try shopping him or anything, you can probably still sign him for less than $1 million. Yeah, who else? Oh, Strait. I like Strait. I think he's got a legitimate shot now, depending, what happens with maybe Martin or McCulloch. Whether Shiro wants to try and, really shake things up on the blue line, like people are thinking will happen. I think Strait's got a legitimate shot at being one of the starting six on the blue line. So that's my take.
Damien, thoughts?
Well, let me make sure I'm not muted here. All right, good. Because I was
There
eating an apple.
you
So,
go. Nice.
Apple a day.
That's all, just one. Let's see, in terms of, just like free agency and whatnot, I think that, I tend to think that Brent Johnson will be gone as well. I agree with Corey there. I think the Penguins need, I don't know if they need a more legitimate shot, but see, the biggest problem that Ray Shero has at the moment is, really all he can sign is role players. You know, it's just at this point, you know, he's not going to lock anybody up. He's not going to go for a big contract because he knows he's got to save everything and anything he can potentially to keep on. You know, obviously, Sid is not going anywhere despite some of the recent tweets that some people have been putting out there about his, you know, him basically saying, well, we're not going to do anything to the collective bargaining agreement. That's standard. Obviously, he wouldn't do anything. You know, I think, if anything, he's saying that primarily because he wants to make sure that, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, that he doesn't sign too much where he can't put players around him. You know, I mean, I don't, as much as, obviously, you know, you argue that Sid's the best player in the world, you know, I think there's a sense in which, you know, if he knows he can take a million less a year to keep around, you know, the core for another 4 years to give another shot at it, I think you might see that happen. But, so I don't think he's going to be, you know, he's going to go crazy with that. You may not see talks until that's finalized. And the same thing with Jordan Staal. But, you know, I mean, I think Sullivan might, you might see Sullivan come back for, you know, for maybe like a million or so. You know, I think he was happy on his team. His role was pretty good. I don't see him as a top, really, really a serious top three guy. Top six, maybe. But, you know, again, it's hard. I mean, what are you going to do with $1.5 million? I mean, you know, you got to be happy that you got 26 goals out of Pascal Dupuis, which is a $1.5 million cap hit, 19 goals out of Matt Cook, $1.8 million cap hit. And, you know, the goals were great from Cook, but I think, you know, one of the things that that Corey mentioned about getting rid of McIntyre and Asham is that, you know, well, I agree that neither one of them will probably be back. I mean, the Penguins lose, especially with a reformed Matt Cook, where's the grit now? You know, like, who do you go to for that, you know, that sort of, that pest? And, you know, I think I saw Derek from Pens Blog guys, somebody retweeted him and said that was one of the things that Penguins missed heavily in this playoffs is a pest. And they didn't have anybody that was going to go out and, you know, basically annoy, you know, the stars in the other team like Matt used to do. And obviously Matt can't do that anymore because, you know, for many reasons that we all know. But I think they need a couple of grinders, you know. They need somebody, you know, like but Joe Vitale was a grinder, but he was never really a pest. And I think that's one of the things the Penguins need to look at in the offseason as well. I don't see Jason Williams even, you know, that he's just going to fade away like Mark Eaton did. Scott Monroe, I couldn't even tell you who he was, to be quite honest with you. And Ryan Craig, I know he did. I think those two were Wilkes-Barre guys. And you may see Ryan Craig come back to Wilkes-Barre, but I don't think he's going to hit the big leagues. Maybe he will, but that could be wrong. I mean, you never know. But I think, you know, defensively, I think the Penguins really need to take a strong consideration at Paul Martin, just because of, you know, I know he had a concussion and, you know, I know he's your, you know, he's supposed to be your puck moving defenseman, but he is a major liability on defense. And when you have the guy locked up till 2014, 2015 at $5 million a year, I mean, I almost think that might go down as, you know, Ray Sherrill's worth signing. I hope I'm, you know, again, I said this in the beginning of the season about James Neal. I hope I'm wrong. I really do hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And James Neal proved me wrong. So I hope Paul Martin, if he stays at the team next year, completely proves me wrong. I don't think McCulloch is all that bad for $4 million. I think I'd be a little bit more, you know, concerned with Paul Martin. But, you know, having McCulloch make more than, you know, Orpik, I guess, is okay. Not making more than Crystal Tang. I mean, Crystal Tang is the height of the defense. I think you'll see Metnick's going to come back, and I think Brian Strait's got an opportunity. And I mean, the Penguins do have some prospects, but that's, you know, these guys are probably 2 years away, like Joe Morrow in defense. You know, then you got the one kid they just signed, who, you know, Bo Bennett. You know, he's about 3 years away from probably making the bigs, unless he just blows things out of the water. But you know, they're going to have to fill in with role players, and that probably all comes back to. Not probably all comes back, but that's, you know, that's one of the big things and big concerns you have to have with, you know, having the big, you know, the big three. And now that you have Neal locked up for, you know, forever, and you got at $5 million, and you know you're going to probably sign Crosby for pretty close to, you know, what he's got now, if not the same. Malkin's only a year away after that, and then, you know, and then you got to worry about Staal the same year. So I don't know. It's gonna be tricky. It certainly is going to be difficult. I think I mean, it pains us to say, but I think Max Talbot actually had an incredible year with Philly. He got at the role that he wanted to get, and he made the most of it. And I think he actually was extremely good, for Philly against our team. I mean, he was kind of that pest. He was that grinder that knew exactly what to do and got some really, really cheap goals that Fleury certainly should have stopped. But at the same time, I don't know if you're going to see Tangrady back. I think I've always thought Tangrady was going to be Shero's opportunity to, his trade bait. And we said it earlier in the season. I think you're going to see that again. So I don't know. What do you think, Doug?
I do think I agree with you too that Niskanen will probably be back. Sullivan, I think, could be another cheap guy just to add. I feel like he kind of, really enjoys it being there, and they had a decent season, and it was kind of a refreshing thing away from Nashville, not really having to deal with too many injuries and that kind of thing. So I do think he'll be back. I will say that in a utopian kind of world, I would love to see Shero work some kind of magic to deal Paul Martin to a team that needs to hit the cap floor. Because I think that's the only way you could possibly get rid of him, if there's a team that's searching for the cap floor. Now, let's remember last offseason, the Panthers signed umpteen people on the first day, and they still had barely hit the cap floor. So maybe there is a team out there that would do that, knowing they need to hit whatever that floor is set at. So I'm not sure that that's possible, but I'm saying that's the only chance you would have if you try to get rid of Paul Martin. I think McCulloch is good. I think he just needs to find the right partner. I think that's his issue. Because there was a stretch, in February, March, whenever he was playing with Orpik, that it just seemed like those two knew exactly what was going on at all times. But, I agree also that there's going to be guys you're going after that are probably role players. And, if I can throw some names out at you. Jason Garrison would be nice from Florida defenseman. He's 27 years old. He's only making $675,000. But his season this year makes that salary probably go up, I would say, to at least 1.5, at least, probably more. I think he's had a decent season, and that would be a good guy to go after. Jason Frazier from the Kings. I don't know if you guys saw the overtime winner the Kings scored to eliminate the Canucks, but it was basically all Frazier's speed that made that play happen. He looked like, at all times, the fastest player on the ice for either team that entire series, and I think he'd be somebody that'd be good to go after. Once again, I don't know if he's somebody that they will have a chance. I see him as a player that doesn't make the Kings squad again next year based on the moves they made. But I don't know if he's somebody that would be in the eye of Ray Shero, what have you. Alexander Solzer from Buffalo, 27 years old, defenseman again. Another one of those guys is making under $1 million right now, and who knows where he'll land. I would say that I understand the grit that you were talking about, Damian. I think there's a difference between goon and somebody with grit.
Oh, yeah.
And so I hope they don't re-sign another goon. Now, I think Asham has the grit. McIntyre's just a goon. So, I would hope they don't try to don't take a run at somebody like that again, just to have somebody like that on the team. I think there's some other guys around the league that try to provide that grit, i.e. Rafi Torres, and just go way over the line. So it's tough. I just hope that somebody like McIntyre isn't a part of the team. But it will definitely be interesting, because I think you're going to be looking at guys right now that are making less than $1 million as, potential targets, if there are going to be anybody that's signed, outside of the Penguins organization. So, it'll be interesting. You could see some names, that some journeymen that just fill roles, kind of like, what happened this past year. So, as far as the guys in Wilkes-Barre, I don't know that any of them are going to be really challenging. I think what will be interesting to me is to see the health of Dustin Jeffrey, to see where he fits in, because I think his health plays a big part in what Shero might do. I think when he's been healthy, he's definitely shown some signs of filling a role on the third or fourth line that is necessary. So, it'll be interesting. Obviously, there's a bunch of players that Penguins fans need to just get out of their mind right now that, you know, we're not, there's no, nobody in the Penguin system thinks they're going to be making a run at Zach Parise. So, you know, stop thinking that, you know, so we'll see where that goes from here. You know, obviously, as the playoffs go on, the guys that are still active right now might end up getting a little bit more attention. And we'll see how it goes, but don't expect too many fireworks, I would say. And once again, the CBA is going to determine a lot of this. But before we turn topics to general and NHL discussion, gentlemen, I often lead the conversation and prod and poke, and you guys give me the answers. But I'd like to just open it up, see if there's anything you'd like to say to recap the season in general about the Penguins or hockey in general, whatever, and then we'll turn it over to just general NHL discussion. So, Damien, any final parts on the Penguins season, or as we move forward to just look at the general NHL?
I'm going to go ahead and just say it was just disappointing. You know, there was a lot. I will say this. I wanted to mention this earlier, but it just evaded me from whatever line of thinking I was trying to bring across. But I think, you know, the Penguins, it seems to me, anyway, that they play better when they're not the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it's different, you know, immediately comes to mind when they played the Canes, and obviously they were the favorite there in the Eastern Conference Finals 2009. You know, and they were just, an infinitely better team at that time. I mean, the Cardiac Canes made their run. And, you know, they just happened to be a real good matchup against, you know, New Jersey when they took them out. And Boston as well. They just happened to take them out as well. So, you know, that sort of was a perfect storm for the Penguins to be able to get to the Stanley Cup again. But, you know, when they went into the Stanley Cup, when they went into the first round, you know, when they played Philly, it was kind of a toss-up because it was still 4-5. You know, when they played Washington, I think Washington was probably the President's Trophy winners, I think, that year. So they were obviously the favorite. And then, you know, obviously they just kind of mopped up the Canes. But then when they got to the Stanley Cup Finals, they still weren't the favorite. And they played with their backs to the wall, and they played better that way. And this is just, I think, this season they sort of had, you know, they did have the chip on their shoulder. People were thinking that. I mean, people kept picking them as the favorites. And, you know, like you guys mentioned, they kind of got to their heads a little bit. And, you know, they sort of relied on that as almost an entity that would get them through without their hard work and just kind of like a sad, disappointing season. I mean, it's you always look back at what could have been, and you know, you really hope that the window of opportunity isn't closing, in the sense that you know, obviously hockey's hockey and everything can you know, anybody has a shot once they get into the playoffs, as evidenced by this year. But, you know, when you have as dominant as a team as they do right now offensively, and you know, they had Fleury in net, who was great all year up until the playoffs, you know, it's just you hope that that doesn't close the door and create more difficulties and finger-pointing, because losing can do that. Losing can create a lot of fractions amongst players, as much as they love each other. You know, when you lose, you look at other guys like, more could they have done, and that's just had the nature of sports. And then sometimes you know, GM's got to make some decisions, and you know, another year has passed, and so, you know, it's just disappointing, and hopefully doesn't, you know, they get another crack at it next year with a little bit more desire and focus on what they want to do for the playoffs, and hopefully a more renewed Sidney Crosby as well.
Corey, final thoughts on the Pens?
Yeah, it's almost a feeling of emptiness. I mean, you saw the potential with Crosby coming back, and you know, I guess, I mean, we all kind of bit into the hype of, you know, another Stanley Cup run, and just ran into a brick wall. And I don't know. I mean, I think you know, I think the identity of this team, from a role player type standpoint, I think will change next year. I think we will see more of those kind of guys on this team. I hope Shiro I hope Shiro kind of shakes things up a little bit because, I don't know, it just, we looked like a very stagnant team, and you just can't be that way. So, I don't know, man, it sucks. And, you know, I'm looking up at the TV, I see, you know, a game 7 going on, and you're thinking, well, you know, that could have been us last night. Mm-hmm. It sucks. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna, you know, wait for next year and you know, hope they make another run at it.
Yeah, yeah. Stagnant is a good word. I enjoy that use of that word. So yeah, I mean, there's not really much else you can say. I unfortunately was very pessimistic going into the series, just given the track record against Philadelphia, and that unfortunately is how it played out. And you know, Claude Giroux is an amazing, amazing player, and it makes you wonder how he slipped into the 20s in his draft class. And you know, Philadelphia is lucky to have him for sure. And yeah, just regroup now. You know, I know some people out there, that's pretty much the end of hockey season for them. You know, we'll probably still end up watching the playoffs here and see how it unfolds, but you know, move on, and I guess the organization will start building momentum for next year, and the draft being here, and that kind of thing. So we'll see how it goes from here on out. But with that said, as Corey mentioned, there's a one game 7 going on right now, and by the time most of you listen to this, it'll probably be over. Two moments I'd like to point out in the Caps Bruins game 7, if you didn't get to see them. At one point in time, Bruins on a power play, Peverly in front, gets cross-checked, picks himself up, hits the defenseman, then gets pushed in the back by Braden Holtby, the goaltender, gets up and does a like three-quarter slash, blatant slash, but stops like right before Holtby's face. Holtby never flinches and looks at him like, "You're crazy, dude. Get out of my face." It was awesome. And at one point in time in this game, the Capitals actually had the puck behind their own net, getting ready to set up a play, and the person that touched the puck behind the net with no pressure changed twice. So there were three different people touching the puck behind the net with no action going on. Wow. That reminded me of Game 1. It was pretty bad. Anyway, there's another Game 7 tomorrow night, and it's Devils-Panthers, probably one of the least exciting playoff matchups in recent history. You pulling for either team, Corey? Do you care who wins that one?
I don't.
Yeah.
I my team to win it all now, I guess. I'm actually rooting for the Kings. I kind of have this thing where, like, no team that is in warm weather deserves a Stanley Cup. But I am a big fan of Quick and Kopitar. I hate Richards and Carter, but they're young guys. And, I mean, plus they got Scuderi. I love Scuderi. I had to tweet a while back, Paul Martin for Rob Scuderi straight up.
Yeah.
I think Shiro needs to really consider that.
Yeah, sounds good. Damien, you...
Yeah, so I'm taking the Kings the rest of the way. It's, I don't know, it's like when you look at these teams, it's just, I mean, especially in the West.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable that, I mean, one of potentially, you know, these teams is going to have a chance at, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals. It's completely shocking, to be honest. But, I mean, I guess it's, I guess it's good for the league. You know, I mean, some of these, you know, non-major market teams, if you want to, you know, call it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it's good for the league, good exposure, and I guess, you know what, once again, well, depending what happens with Ottawa, Canada once again could go without a Stanley Cup championship team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually kind of surprised that Vancouver didn't turn into ashes again after
yeah,
you know, they're falling on their faces. But go Kings. Here's the go Kings.
Damien, you have a... Do you care at this point in time who wins the Stanley Cup? Are you pulling for any certain team? Or?
Yeah, I'm voting. You know, I'm going for the Coyotes only because of my allegiance to the Suns.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd like to see, if you will, the underdog win. But I've always been kind of that type of fan. But yeah, you know, I remember Corey saying at the beginning that he thought the Penguins were going to play the Kings in the finals. So to see if the Kings could actually get there would be an interesting little feat. At least half right in his prediction. So
the glass would be half empty.
It was terribly half empty. But I think you know, for in terms of the game that's going on now, you know, I kind of don't care, but for some reason I want to see the Caps win, and I don't know why, really. I don't really have a good thing for that, but I'm sort of rooting for them in a way, and it's kind of strange, but I just am. I mean, I don't really hate the Bruins, and I mean, I kind of always hated the Caps to some degree, but so I don't really know where this is coming from, and I might need some pills for it, but that's sort of going for them. That, and in terms of the Panthers Devils, I mean, I don't really care there either, but I actually like to see Florida kind of do it, just because it was sort of just throw a monkey wrench into the NHL, like, oh, really? So, like, the Panthers? But I guess the only reason I wouldn't want to see those two teams get in there is because neither one of those teams is going to have a shot against the Flyers. So, and I'm, you know, in terms of the rankings, I'm not sure who they played next if all those teams won. But, you know, I think... you know, if they do win, I think the Flyers are going to find themselves in the finals, and it would be interesting to see a Kings Flyers bout, especially with, you know, is Gagne still on the Kings too, or is he off? Simon Gagne, I don't remember.
I think so.
Yeah, so you have Gagne, Carter, and Richards, all former Flyers. So that would be an interesting finals. And I honestly don't really care about the Stanley Cup, but I am going for Coyotes just because of my allegiance to the Chiefs.
Yeah, you know, the Western Conference played out like I wanted it to, really. Not necessarily how I picked it. I didn't think Nashville would win, but good for them. And it is an interesting set of matchups in the second round there in the Western Conference. You know, I think it's all coming down to goaltending play there. I mean, Mike Smith versus Pekka Rinne at the beginning of the season did not sound very exciting, but... all of a sudden does, given how both of those players are playing at this point in time. So, yeah, that's interesting. I obviously wouldn't mind seeing the Coyotes win. You know, obviously I have some connections to the area, but, you know, any of those teams out west is actually pretty interesting to me. I at this point in time, I'd just like to see anybody from the west win and not anybody from the east. So it really doesn't, you know, in the long run, it doesn't matter to me. Damien, I know you're not alone in actually pulling for the Capitals. It's weird to have this feeling like they are the lesser evil. I don't know if either of you have ever been to a game in D.C. There's a gentleman that, and you can hear them on the telecast sometimes, that sits directly behind one of the goalie creases with a vuvuzela, and I believe he did this before they became popular in the World Cup, but he basically blows them three times, and everyone yells, "Let's go, Caps!" And it's probably the most annoying thing in all of sport that I have actually been in place for. And unfortunately, like, even when I want to pull for the Caps over another team, all I can hear is that, and it annoys the heck out of me. So, regardless, you know, I'd rather just see a team from the West win. I think along with Corey, I've, you know, kind of thought that the Kings would be pretty good this year, and I'm glad to see that they did prove it at least in the first round. So we'll see what happens when they take on the Blues, who look to be quite the intriguing team. I don't know what Ken Hitchcock did, but he did something right. Let's just go some rapid fire questions. Is there a player that you'd like to see win the cup the most, Corey?
No.
Don't care. Damien, you got any certain player you'd like to see win the cup?
Yeah, it's hard to say because I don't want to see it because I hate Philly to death, but I love Jágr, and I mean I kind of always have.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for me to say I want to see it for him, but I mean I want to see the guy win the cup, but I don't want to see him win it Philly. So I'm hoping that he doesn't at all win it, but you know, it's my thing, you know. So it hurts me to to say that I'd want to see him. But other than that, I really don't care. The rest of the league, good luck to everybody else.
All right, I'll go with Shane Doan just because I think even getting to the first round was a milestone for him. So he's been in the league a long time, so we'll go with Shane Doan to back up the Phoenix analogy there. The most annoying pest in all of the first round so far, since Damien brought up the pest word earlier. Most annoying pest in the first round. Damien, you got one?
The most annoying hockey player at the moment is probably... he was just suspended 25 games, so I'm gonna have to go with
Rafi Torres. Yeah,
with Torres there. So yeah, I mean it's just uncalled for as well, regardless of the fact. But.
All right, Corey, you got a most annoying player pest?
Hartnell. He's such a baby. he's one of those guys, and I think both of you would agree with me too. If he was a Penguin, you would love him.
Yeah,
you would absolutely fall in love with him. But my God, I hate him. I absolutely despise the guy.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a tie between Brad Marchand and Brian Boyle. Marchand, I feel like he's not even really trying to play hockey. He's just trying to bother everybody. And if you're watching the game this evening while we're taping this, he's just like flying at people. Doesn't even care. He's leaving his feet. I mean, it's just whatever. He's not even trying to play hockey. And then Brian Boyle, I understand it, but when he just kind of started to cold cock Erik Karlsson in game one, and then, of course, he got cold cocked after that. I mean, I don't understand what the point in that was. You just go after somebody and start hitting him in the face, you know. And he had his back turned to him. It's ridiculous. How about play some hockey first before you go after somebody? That'd be great. That's just my thought there. But, all right, last question, and then we'll wrap it up. Henrik Lundqvist was complaining about the goal allowed last game. I don't know if you guys heard what he said, but he said basically that somebody must want Ottawa back into this series. Baby or understandable? Corey.
I think he's whining.
Yeah.
I think he's just mad that he let it in.
Yeah. Damien, any thoughts?
I think I think Tortorella is rubbing off on him. I mean, I didn't actually see the goal, to be honest with you. And so that I can't really make a judgment on it. But, I don't know that he's been much of a whiner to begin with.
Yeah.
I never really heard much out of him before other than him talk about his good looks. But so I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to make a decision. But if he's anything like his coach, he's just whining. He's making excuses.
All right, so now that hockey's over, where's your attention go at this point in time, Damien? Is it all Suns for the remaining one game?
Not really, because now we're not. There's no way we can go in the playoff. I actually tried to stay up and watch most of the game last night.
Yeah.
It was 74-74.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, you know what? They've won a lot of games when I haven't watched. Went to bed, woke up, and it was 108 to, I don't know, it was like 100-88. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I was like, man, no, this just sucks. So I'm going to watch him tonight just for the sake of watching Nash, because it's probably going to be his last game in the Phoenix uniform. But I'm kind of sportless. I'm sort of going to keep following, at an arm's length, my Cincinnati Reds, and, keep seeing what's going to happen with the Lions in the draft and see what, they can put together. But other than that, it's kind of like it's a dead summer for me, because this is like, this is like the first year, well, I guess last year too, but first like kind of couple of years that one of my teams hasn't sort of been in it. Phoenix has always kind of went to either at least the semifinals or the conference finals, and Penguins, won the cup, and that can sort of drag out. You sort of expect the next year not to win it again, because it's really hard to win back-to-backs nowadays. But it's kind of like, it's all over. And not only that, but also my deck hockey's over, which has kind of been like my focus for sports in general. So it's like, it's all over for me.
Yeah.
Now it's just kind of, I don't know, just watch who's ever playing on the TV, and just so hope you get good games like these game sevens instead of the sweeps, and just watch the sports and appreciate it for the game.
Corey, where's your attention at?
My attention shifts to the NBA. Living in Indianapolis, we got playoff tickets for game two. So be switching over for the Pacers. And for me, I'm a big IndyCar guy, and now living in Indianapolis, the month of May is always big for the 500. So I'll be spending hopefully some time out at the track, watching some cars, and drinking some beer in the sun.
There you go. Well, as always, I like to bring up the unusual, but today was the Champions League semifinal between Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, and Munich won on penalty kicks and will play in the final on May 19th in their home stadium, and that is exciting to me, so I'm very happy about that. Baseball guy, I think there's some people out there that on Twitter that only follow me during hockey season because they can't stand how much I talk about baseball. And I get it. I understand. Really, I do. So, no, I do not take offense to that. I will say that, you know, my second team in the NBA has always been the Sixers as well. And it's interesting to watch their putrid last month and a half here. So, the NBA almost sparked my interest to a new level this year. And then they started to suck. The Suns never really figured it out. And therefore, I lost it. So, yeah, you know what? Soccer, it is for me. There's a couple of friendlies coming up for the United States as well. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be watching the playoffs, the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but we'll see how it goes. And that's it, I guess. Doing the thing day by day, right? That's all you can do.
Yep. That will be all.
It would be nice to get back into playing some tennis, too. That would be good. It's about that time. But... gentlemen, it's been real. The Penju podcast, although there was some hiatuses in there, fairly good and fun time for us. We appreciate all of you that have listened over this past year. We will be writing and sharing, and hopefully if I can get on top of things again, I will continue to track the CBA, as that seems to be something I always tend to lean on and enjoy talking about. And hopefully I won't badmouth Donald Fehr too much or the owners or anything along those lines. So we'll see how that goes. Final thoughts, anything, Corey?
Go Kings and Pacers.
Go Kings and Pacers. Nice. Damian, final thoughts?
Pens in 2013.
There you go. Optimistic. That's what we like. It's good to hear. Regardless, we hope you have enjoyed our podcast over the year, and let us know. Get a hold of us. Twitter, always the good one. Facebook for those of you on there. And enjoy it. We'll talk to you later. Penju Podcast, signing off.